welcome to a special presentation of Everything Home, the transformational show where we talk about life, stuff, and balance, and showcase good people doing good business and good things. This is our signature segment, The Massey Memo, with our expert contributor, Robert Massey, attorney, solution provider, and protector of the people at Massey and Massey Attorneys at Law. Robert delivers The Massey Memo on the first and third Fridays of every month. His engaging and entertaining personality gives the boring law just the jolt it needs to make you want to tune in and learn to better play the hand you've been dealt in this game we call life. Enjoy the show. Everything Home, the transformational show where we talk about life, stuff, and balance. We're a resource and community that shares stories, lets passions be heard, and showcases good people doing good business and good things. We've created a platform where you can do something to change your life or the life of another person, where thoughts, passions, and emotions are given an action that actually becomes a reality and makes a difference. It's a place where the community can learn from and support its own members. We deliver authenticity, celebrate heroes, and bring together a like-minded audience. The mission of our movement? Enhance the quality of your life. All of our guests and experts' information and their shows are listed on our website, everythinghometalkshow.com. We encourage you to check it out and begin to use it as a resource to meet, hire, and learn from good people doing good business and good things. Just click anywhere on their banners and enjoy the show. You can also listen and subscribe to Everything Home on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, TuneIn, Player FM, and Blog Talk Radio. We're making it very easy and convenient for you to listen to us and enhance the quality of your life. And remember to like and follow Everything Home on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. This is our expert contributor segment, The Massey Memo with Robert Massey, our attorney, solution provider, and protector of the people at Massey and Massey Attorneys at Law. Robert will be delivering The Massey Memo on the first and third Fridays of every month. Today's topic, capitalism and the law, why it's the best system and what you need to know. As the audience knows, I love to say protector of the people at Massey and Massey Attorneys at Law. I might just throw it into the show at multiple random times. It reminds Robert that he has to continually wear his cape to protect the people. So first my joke and then on with the show, and we're going to be talking about capitalism because it is such an important thing. And it's kind of getting a bad rap recently, and we will get into that in detail. Socialism, you have two cows, the state takes one and gives it to somebody else. Communism, you have two cows, the state takes both of them and gives you the milk. Fascism, you have two cows, the state takes both of them and sells you the milk. Military dictatorship, you have two cows, the state takes both of them and then shoots you. Bureaucracy, you have two cows, the state takes both of them, accidentally kills one and spills the milk in the sewer. And capitalism, you have two cows, you sell one, and you buy a bull. Not quite a joke, but when I read the thing about getting shot, I thought that was kind of funny that they took your cows and then they shot you, which reminds me of something down in Venezuela, which totally opposite of where we are. So, Mr. Robert, how are you doing today?
I am doing well. How are you? I appreciate the you're like my hype man now with the protector of the people. I should just bring you around with me everywhere and you can just constantly be saying that in the background. That'd be fantastic.
Hey, you're more than welcome to hire me at a very somewhat economical rate to be your PR spokesperson, and I will be on cue. I mean, and depending on the cost, I mean, I actually can go for weeks at a time and just follow you around. So you just point and then I come out and say something. So yeah, no, there's a lot of things that we can do. Thus capitalism. See, I'm constantly reinventing and creating multiple streams of income because of how the structure is. So it's a perfect example of why capitalism is so much better than anything else.
Exactly.
And yes, and small business also, which we'll get into that because they go hand in hand.
Yes, they do. Yes, that would not, you could not be my hype man in a socialist society.
No, I could not, because then we would always be having some sort of a collective goal where there is no competition and you and I would be equal, even though we're not equal. So what? Yeah. Wait, just go, wait, what? So I could work really hard and work 20 hours a day, and the other guy's working an hour, and he doesn't even work hard, but we get the same? No, doesn't work that way. Yeah.
Yeah, there's some issues with it, but there's definitely some interesting paths to go down in this topic, and it does seem to be ever-present in today's media, kind of this overwhelming, I guess, bashing, for lack of a better word, of capitalism, and it's almost become almost a bad thing to be successful. You know, you almost get looked down on because you're successful, because for whatever reason, successful people, you don't look at them now, or a lot of people, I should say, don't look at them now and say, oh, man, they must have worked really hard to get there. Yeah, for some reason, there's this feeling that if someone's successful and has a lot of money, that somehow they were just kind of given that. It's very strange. It's very strange to see the negative blanket that capitalism kind of gets put with nowadays. It's a kind of a recent thing. I don't understand why completely, but it's definitely interesting.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense that you're being punished or you're being ridiculed for being successful and working hard and having a passion and then making something out of nothing because you believe in whatever it is that you're doing, or you're working hard or you're smart. And I think that it's kind of a shame that the people that are ridiculing this and they're making it something that's bad, I guess they automatically think that if you have a successful company, that happens overnight. So I guess what you do is you go, God, I want to start a business. I don't really have much to work with, but I have the drive and I have the ambition. And then a week later, your company is worth $10 million. So I think that's how they think it works. But if you want to talk about the real world, and you know this from being self-employed, that's not even close to how it works. You struggle, you put in your time, you put in your effort, you pay employees before you pay yourself, you go without. You could go for years a lot of the times with just getting by, and then at some point it all starts to flow together, and then you do, if you can, expand it to the point where it's something large where you're making a lot of money. I mean, keep in mind, 50% of new businesses fail within their first 5 years. So the ones that actually succeed could just be getting by, but not a lot of businesses are making millions and millions of dollars when it's one person that started it. But yet, I guess these other people think it's just maybe they have a special phone number for like a magic business fairy that they call up and say, listen, I want to start a business tomorrow. And then they drop off a bunch of cash. And then all of a sudden the company's successful. But, you know, I think it's a shame that the people that are pushing this narrative are also people who have never started their own business or ran a company. But,
yeah,
you know,
and
assume that
really
it's really easy. Yeah, it's not easy.
And they don't, there seems to be a lack of appreciation just for the choice to be able to do that. You know, if capitalism isn't the system, then that choice is completely taken out of your hands. You know, you don't have the choice of, hey, I want to start this, but I have this crazy passion for making magnets, you know, just as a crazy example, and I want to start my own business. You have that choice. There certainly are a lot of obstacles to it. It's very difficult. There's different things that need to be done, which is kind of what I'm going to shift into here and discuss different things that you need to look out for and need to do when starting a business. But the system is what gives you that choice. The biggest example nowadays is Amazon. You got a guy that started this business, and now he's, you know, the richest man. He's worth $150 billion. But at the beginning, he wasn't, and he worked hard, and he put in the time. And now Amazon has announced a program yesterday that they are offering employees 3 months' salary and $10,000 to quit their jobs and to go start their own delivery companies, because Amazon's trying to make their deliveries even faster, and there's not enough delivery companies out there to use to get to where they want to be. So they're actually encouraging this entrepreneurship from their employees and saying, hey, We'll even help you out. We'll give you your 3 months salary. We'll give you $10,000 in startup money for you to go out there and start your own delivery business and be able to have a lot more upward mobility, where in a different type of economic system like socialism, that's not there. That's not an option. The government isn't saying, let's try, if you guys go do this, the sky's the limit. And that's why when I hear things like, well, we need to put some type of cap on individual wealth because of a guy like Jeff Bezos who's amassed this massive amount of wealth now, it kind of goes against everything that it is, that capitalism is. I mean, that's the dream. I mean, that's a 1 in 10 billion shot that you're going to start a business and end up being worth $150 billion. But that's the possibility. And there's a lot of in-between that happens. If we had something different and if the choice wasn't there, all of a sudden I think people would sing a different tune and would be like, oh, you know what, there were a lot of benefits to this. Now, I mean, is it a perfect system? Of course not. No system is perfect. But having that freedom and having – and I think we can see it from the areas of our – and look, I'm not an economist in any sense, but from areas of our economy and our system that are socialist in nature, like Medicare, like Social Security, we see the problems with those systems. There's a good chance that by the time I hit the age of – being eligible for Medicare and Social Security, there's a good chance I would have paid into those systems my entire life and will get no benefit from them whatsoever. So people need to just kind of calm down and look. I mean, is there vast inequality from the top to the bottom? Absolutely. But there's certainly, when you look at the alternative, it's definitely having that choice and having that ability to just wake up one morning and say, hey, I'm going to start this business. You really can't put a value to that. And kind of what I'm going to do now that I've gone on my little political rant here, but is if you do wake up one morning and say, hey, I want to start this business, to provide you the information that you can go forward and feel confident that you're doing the right thing. And I think the number one thing, forget about legal, forget about anything else, is just having a clear plan. There's a reason why if you're trying to get an investor to invest in your business, there's a reason why one of the main things they want to see is your business plan, because they want to see what your vision is. And that document is as important for someone investing money into your business as it is for you, because that gives you a clear vision of where you're going. You might know, okay, I want to sell this, but sitting down and going through all the different steps of, okay, how am I going to do this? Where am I going to do it? Where am I going to have these made, et cetera? It just paints the picture fully and allows you to weed out the problems before you get there, so you're not surprised. Now, you're going to run into 1,000 things you probably didn't think of, and that's fine, but at least trying to go through and having a clear picture, I think, is more than half the battle, because a lot of people do exactly what I say. They wake up and they say, I want to start this business, and they go full head into it. And that's why 50% of businesses close in the first year, because there wasn't that thought process. And there wasn't that sitting down and making sure that you knew where you were going. And beyond that, you know, my dad always used to say that if you're going to start a business, there's three relationships that you have to have. You need to have a good CPA, you need to have a good lawyer, and you need to have banking relationships. And the most interesting one to me is the banking relationship, because everything is so digital and so hands-off. You know, when I was a kid, my dad, his entire life, never carried an ATM card. He never a debit card. He never went to an ATM. He would always insist on going into the bank and writing checks, et cetera. And I always used to say, why? You know, they make ATM cards. This can be a much easier process for you. And, you know, he always used to say, no, I want to have a relationship with these people. I want them to know my face, because there's going to be a day where I have to go ask them for money, because any small business needs money. You know, they very rarely Can you be fully funded on your own or by your family or by your friends? And having that face-to-face, having that relationship so they know who you are, it puts a face to the name and it gives you a relationship with them before you start, and you're not just a loan application number to them. So that's one that people really don't think about up front and leave it more to just the process of it, and don't think of, oh, you know, it would make a difference if I go out of my way and just take an extra few minutes to go into the bank and know the people that work there. And look, I mean, if you're dealing with the national bank like Wells Fargo and Bank of America, it can be difficult. It absolutely can, but there are still people there you can get to know and have that relationship. And it really, I mean, I've seen it with my own eyes. It provides a benefit to you. You need to have a good CPA. You need to have a good accountant to know how things are going to be structured in your business and the tax element of it and how that's going to be handled. And obviously how your company is going to be taxed is based off of the entity that you choose. And that is where I come in as an attorney. The first thing, of course, after you have a business plan, you know where you're going, you need to start an entity, and it could be a sole proprietorship, where if it is a sole proprietorship, you need absolutely nothing. You don't need one document. You don't need anything. You can just start. You could have a partnership. Now, the one thing people need to know about partnerships is there's no requirement for any type of state filing or paperwork or anything to create a partnership. The legal definition of a partnership is two people carrying on in a common task for a profit. So if you right now are in that situation, but you think no partnership exists because you don't have a partnership agreement, you're wrong. The partnership, legally, a partnership exists, and there's going to be a way that is taxed. And then obviously you have an LLC, and you have an S corp or a C corporation, and those entities require filings with the state and certain yearly requirements with annual lists of officers and members, bylaws, etc. There's a lot of different things that need to be done to keep those entities in place. But every company is different. What's going to work for my company isn't going to work for your company necessarily, which is why that initial conversation of here's what I want to do and understanding where you're going will allow us to be able to brainstorm together and figure out the type of entity that's going to fit the best for your business. And I've talked about this on previous shows, but I implore people to take the time and spend a little bit of money up front. And I know when you're starting a business, every penny counts. But I cannot tell you how much money it'll save you on the back end if you just establish these relationships, especially with an attorney, up front to ensure that your company is set up properly, that you're in a good position to move forward. Because if you go on LegalZoom and download an operating agreement and go on the Secretary of State and start your LLC and get going, and all of a sudden you want to bring in investors, or you have a fight with one of your investors or one of your members or one of your managers, whatever it might be, and you go to these documents that you feel protect you, and all of a sudden you realize, well, there's nothing in here about this. There's nothing in here that protects me. Then it's going to cost you a lot more money on the back end to fix that problem. So it really is just economically better to spend a little money up front and not have to worry about it on the back end. So the entity choice for your company and establishing, if it's an LLC, an operating agreement, if it's a corporation, the bylaws up front can really be beneficial. And I want to just go back for a second to the partnership aspect of it, because don't get me wrong, you can absolutely have a partnership agreement, and I suggest that you do, because just like an operating agreement for an LLC, can govern, you know, that relationship and how that entity operates, that partnership agreement can do the same. And if you have a partner, if you have multiple partners, you can have an agreement that kind of governs your relationship and how profits are going to be split, how losses are going to be split, how the company is going to be operated. You can put all of that in a partnership agreement. The only reason for me bringing that up is it's not needed for a partnership to be in existence, where an LLC, well, an operating agreement isn't needed for an LLC to be in existence. You actually have to file something with the state for the LLC to be considered in existence, where a partnership, you don't have to file anything for it to be in existence, just like a sole proprietorship. So, you know, those types of things are just things that people aren't really aware of, but are so important and so essential to handle up front. And again, I know there's a lot of things going on when you're trying to start a business, but that entity choice is important, because especially, for example, you know, if say you start an LLC and you don't do an operating agreement and you go and you want to try and get investors into the business, and you have to have something in writing to govern their investment. You know, what type of percentage ownership are they going to get? How are they going to be paid out from that investment? Do they get paid out first before anyone? Do they get paid out second? How does that work? Do they get voting shares in the company? Are they not involved in the management of the company at all? Is it just their financial investment? I mean, there are a plethora of legal issues that come along with this, and as your business grows, it's going to be very difficult for you to get to where you want to be if you don't have that solid foundation from the start to make sure that you can build on top of it, and it can go from making nothing to, like Amazon, you being worth $150 billion. But that solid foundation is what's needed, and it allows you to grow, and it allows you to change along the way, because there's nothing saying, as your company grows and changes, if you're an LLC or if you're a partnership, you can always switch over to another type of entity if that's what is needed in your company. If it's going to be more beneficial, if you have that good relationship with the CPA that I highly recommend, and he looks at you and says, hey, from a tax perspective, it's going to be much better for you moving forward if you're taxed as a C corporation than a partnership, and you have that solid foundation, that's an easy transition. You don't have to undo bad things or bad documents that you might have gotten, or no documents at all of how the company is supposed to go about doing a changeover like that. So it just makes that process easier. It makes your life easier. And it, when you're starting a business, all you want to do is increase the probability of it being successful. I mean, you clearly aren't starting it to fail. So if you plan on succeeding, you have to act like you are planning on succeeding. And someone that's planning on succeeding is going to go through the proper steps to establish the company right up front with the proper entity, with the proper banking relationships, with the proper relationship with the CPA. And it's just something that's not done a lot. People are excited. They have an idea. They want to get going. They jump in head first and they just go. I want to sell magnets and I'm just going to go sell magnets. And that's great. That passion is fantastic, but you'll increase your probability of being successful if you just take a beat and just set it up properly. And from an aspect of, as you're starting out, you know, I don't do intellectual property law. It's one of the only areas of law around a business that I don't dabble in, because it is so specific, and it requires a lot of specialty knowledge. But that is another area right from the start that if you are starting a business with some type of product that would qualify or would need some type of intellectual property protection through a trademark, through a copyright, through a patent, that is something that you need to concentrate on immediately and get that process started. Because in a lot of businesses, especially if it's some type of new process or new product, the main value of the company will come from the patent on whatever that product is, because a patent provides you, you know, sole ownership of whatever that is for a period of time. I believe it's 20 years. Don't quote me on that, because again, I don't practice in this area, but I believe it's 20 years. And so for 20 years, if you have a patent on this, you have that protection. You're the only one that can make and sell it. Now, if someone came with a variation of whatever you're doing, they can go, you know, patent that and do that. But that specific product or process that you've come up with, you have that protection. So if all of a sudden the free market in our capitalist society decides that this product that you've come up with has a tremendous amount of value and you're selling these things like crazy and you have that protection for 20 years, you can imagine the type of value that garnishes, because you have that protection. And the intellectual property protection process is lengthy, and it can cost a little bit of money. But it is so essential, and it's something that I see a lot of people disregard or try to do in a very, very shoddy manner through LegalZoom. If there was any area that you really should not do through an online search, it's intellectual property. You want to go to someone that is qualified, that knows what they're doing, and so they can take you through the process step by step and make sure that they give you the proper protection for your company. When I was 16 years old, I came up with this idea for a clothing company. And, you know, what do I know? I'm 16 years old, and I don't know what I'm doing. But I had this idea, and I talked to a couple people that my dad knew, and, you know, maybe they were just blowing smoke at a 16-year-old kid, but they thought it had some merit. And so my dad told me, you know, if I wanted to do this, he'd help me, but I had to do it the proper way. And one of the first meetings I had was with an intellectual property attorney to get the proper protections on the name of the company and the logo for the company, to make sure that was protected and that I could start producing clothes and using this name and this logo freely. Because you could come up with a great name, but you have to make sure that it's not taken by somebody else in that industry. And, you know, going to an intellectual property attorney, they can do all that for you. They can do trademark and copyright searches to make sure your name isn't already protected in that industry. And it's just something that, you know, I think a lot of people, you know, it does pop in their heads that, hey, I need this IP protection. I need to get this trademark or copyright or a patent on it. So it does pop in their heads, but they think just going online and downloading something is all they need, where it really is something you need to go to somebody qualified for. And again, it's just laying that foundation, because I can promise you that if the product you're selling is something that requires a patent, I can promise you, as you're trying to get investors into that company, the first question they are going to ask you in a meeting, the first question is, do you have a patent on this product and when was it established? That is the first question they're going to ask, because they want to know, is that value protected? Because if it's not, and this investor sees that there's value there, all of a sudden they're going to say, well, why do I need to invest in your business? I'll just go get a patent on what you've come up with. I'll get it protected myself, and now I own the value. So, I mean, and that happens every day.
Which is funny, because on Shark Tank, that's what Mr. Wonderful always says. He's like, you two are cockroaches. He goes, if you've got no protection, you've got no patent, why do I need you? Why don't I just take the 50 grand and start my own company? And I know that I can do it better than you two yahoos.
Exactly.
And he says it all the time. You know? He says it all the time.
And it happens all the time. I mean, it happens in the real world every single day, that somebody may have come up with a great idea or a great product, and because they did not establish that proper foundation, it gets stolen right out from under them. And it's terrible to see, and it might be, some people might think that that's a downside of a capitalist society, but they're completely within their rights to do it. So, you know, that's why getting that protection is so important. As you lay that foundation, you start out, you have your business plan, you have a clear vision of where you're going, you know what you're selling, and you know how you're going to do it. Then you set up the entity to get the company established, lay that proper foundation, you get your intellectual property rights protected, and now you have an established business. Now you can start really moving forward with what you want to do. So as the company grows, if you bring in investors, you have that foundation to have the proper agreement with them. And then as you bring on employees, then you have a whole other area that needs to be dealt with. And one of the main things that I do at the firm is to establish, to draft employment agreements for people, and especially drafting non-compete and non-solicitation agreements for people. Now, the employment agreement aspect of it, we're in Nevada. It's an at-will employment state. So you do not have to have employment agreements. And a lot of people don't. A lot of people, especially owners, like the fact that it's an at-will employment state. I can hire and fire you at will, and that's that. But others, you know, for different areas, a lot of people in the sales industry, they like to have an employment agreement to lay out the term of the employment, what it's going to cover, et cetera. And we can lay those agreements out for you. These areas are the small areas of employment law that I get into. You know, when you get into the discrimination side of things and, different employee rights and employer rights, you need someone that concentrates specifically in employment law. But these agreements are things that I do every day, and it can really help establish, again, good foundation for the owners of the company to have. And the non-competes and the non-solicitation agreements are agreements I've started to do a lot more of, because I think I think non-competes are in the news a lot. I think people hear about them a lot and want that protection. And they do provide good protection for a lot of different industries. What people need to understand about non-competes is, number one, each state has different requirements for non-compete agreements. And what I mean by that is, when you do a non-compete, there's usually two or three main items that a court is going to look at to see if this non-compete is valid. Number one, they're going to look at the length of time that you are trying to establish this non-compete for. So, for example, your non-compete will read for, let's just say, 1 year after termination of employment for this employee, they cannot compete with me. We'll get into what compete means in a minute, but that one-year time period in some states will be reasonable and other states might not be. I can tell you right now, I really have not seen any state that is going to consider anything in excess of 2 years to be reasonable in any industry. Usually 2 years is the absolute maximum that you can get a non-compete for, and even 2 years nowadays in most states, I think, is pushing it. Here in Nevada, 2 years is definitely pushing it. It can be validated, but 2 years is pushing it. Usually, if you have a 12-month period, you're pretty safe for it to be held to be valid. The second aspect they look at is the geographic scope that you are stopping this person from competing with you in. So if you're a law firm in Nevada and I have a non-compete with one of my employees that says for 12 months you can't compete with me, I can't say that this person can't compete with me in the entirety of the United States, because that's just not realistic. Usually the geographic scope needs to be tailored to the area that that employee did business in and maybe extend out somewhat. So if I had a non-compete, it would most likely be for Clark County and a 25-mile radius outside of Clark County, something like that. I couldn't say the entirety of the West Coast or anything that would extend that far. Now, if you're in the sales industry and you have a sale, you know, say you have a pharmaceutical sales rep that covers, you know, from everything west of the Mississippi, you know, then a non-compete with that person can have a much broader geographic scope that may be held to be reasonable. But it's all going to come down to kind of how the court analyzes it in the state they're in. But what you want to do with a non-compete, so the first was the time period, the second was the geographic scope, and the third aspect is, does this non-compete protect the interests of the company, or is it overly broad to protect more than just the interests of the company? So those are the three elements that any court in any state are usually going to be looking at. But what you want to do with a non-compete agreement is you really want to make sure that it's reasonable up front. And there's a huge tendency with non-competes, and I have reviewed thousands of non-competes. It's always an issue of contention with businesses, especially new businesses that are trying to protect themselves, where they have these non-competes that are crazy. You know, they're for 3 years in the entire northern hemisphere. And all that does is it ensures that that employee is going to take that to court and they're going to challenge you. So then you have to hire an attorney to fight on your behalf. You have to spend a bunch in attorney's fees. And if it's that out of whack, depending on the state, it might be invalidated in its entirety. And then you spend all this money in attorney's fees and the non-compete is completely invalid. So you've completely, it's been counterintuitive to what you were trying to do. So instead of just trying to be greedy, you know, my dad had another saying, and it's sorry to keep harkening back to him, but his little one-liners are melted into my head. And he had a saying that a pig swallows and a hawk chokes. And just to mean that, you know, if you're trying to be greedy, it isn't going to work out for you. So when you're sitting down for a non-compete as a business, especially a new business trying to start up, sit down with your attorney. Have him draft it. Don't pull something offline again. I know there's an underlying theme through everything I'm saying, which is don't, you know, go to LegalZoom or another place and just pull one of these agreements offline. And I understand that that's a self-serving statement as a practicing attorney, but I say it because I've seen so many people do it, and it just costs more money in the end if you handle it that way. But sit down with your attorney up front to draft this non-compete. Give them a good understanding of what your business is. What is it? Sales based? Is it professional services? What is it? So they can draft a non-compete that will be at least looked at as valid up front, and it won't give the person the inclination of this is ridiculous, and I'm going to challenge it immediately. Because, you know, it can be the best of both worlds. You can draft a non-compete that protects you but still allows that person to go make a living somewhere else. But I can't tell you how much I see non-competes that really just seem like they want this employee to, if they leave this company, they're not allowed to work anywhere and do anything. And that's just it's not a good way to do business, and it's not going to be held up. So it's just another reason you really need to sit down with an attorney and have them draft, you know, the appropriate non-compete. Within the non-compete, there usually is a non-solicitation aspect to it. The non-solicitation aspect is soliciting customers once that employee has left the company, and soliciting your other employees and other managers in your company to make sure that this person doesn't leave and then go after all of your customers and go after and steal all of your employees and go start basically a direct competitor to you. Now, the customer aspect of that is most likely covered by the non-compete, but it provides a secondary protection for you. But the main aspect of the non-solicitation is really the employee aspect, that they can't steal your employees from your company. The time period for that is usually around the same as a non-compete. It's usually for about a year to 2 years. And, you know, it's definitely something that is beneficial to a startup company to have. So, again, just to kind of recap, you have your business plan. You wake up, you want to sell magnets. Get to work on a good business plan that lays everything out, how you want to do it, where you want to do it, you know, what's going to go on, where you're going to get your funds from. Second step, meet with an attorney. Get the proper entity. Have that established. Have the necessary paperwork established. If that goes along with the type of entity that you choose, if it's a sole proprietorship or a partnership, you could do it without any type of paperwork or agreements. But again, I recommend that you don't do that. And then from there, any intellectual property rights, meet with an attorney, have an understanding of what needs to be protected, get that process started. And then again, as you start growing the company and hiring employees and hiring different people, having these different employment agreements and non-compete agreements, non-solicitation agreements in place will provide you the protection that you know that you're going to continue to work and build this company and hopefully build it to the point of whatever your goal is to be a vast success like an Amazon or be a success in the stance that another company like Amazon will come and purchase you, whatever it might be, that you know that you're protected from an employee saying, hey, I'm out of here, and then going next door, setting up shop with all your employees, taking all your customers, and all that hard work you've done has now been taken. So, you know, that really having those different things in place provides you the proper foundation and just allows you, it takes those things, it brings comfort to you, you know, in that way that you know those things are handled. It's just like, it's the same thing that I tell people when they're talking to me about wills and trusts. It's just peace of mind. You know, you did it right from the beginning. It's handled. The foundation is laid. So you know when anything pops up, and Michelle, you know this, and anybody that's ever started a business and has run it on their own, problems are going to pop up. It's going to happen. It's just the nature of life. That you know that foundation's there. You know that it's handled. You can rely on it and know that any problem will be handled. And that's why having those relationships, having a CPA, having a banking relationship, having an attorney, that, you know, having those three relationships along with laying that proper foundation will really allow you to handle any problem that would pop up in your business. And what I've started to do a lot with, a lot of my business clients is they've put me on a monthly retainer that for a certain amount of money, depending on the type of company and, you know, what they're doing, they have me on retainer that they can call me 10 times in a month or they can call me 100 times. Whatever it might be, it's covered by that retainer, and they can run stuff by me if they just have basic legal questions or if they need a contract reviewed or if they need a contract drafted. Whatever it might be, I'm here to help them, and it's really worked out for a lot of my business clients rather than having to come with any new issue every time. And, you know, because as an attorney, if I'm doing work for you, there has to be ethically, I have to have an agreement for any work that I do for you. It's required. So if I'm not on retainer, then each time a problem pops up, you got to come into the office and we'll have to discuss it, which is fine. And a lot of people choose to do it that way, and I'm happy to do it either way. But my clients on retainers have said multiple times just how much easier it is that if something pops up, they can shoot me an email, say, hey, review this. We can get on a conference call. I can discuss it with them, and it's handled. So, you know, that's something that even if it's not me, you know, wherever you are and you have a relationship with an attorney, it's something to discuss with them so you have that, you know, established help and you don't have to go and worry about it if some type of legal issue pops up. And a lot of people nowadays also have in-house counsels. But I have clients that have in-house counsels that also keep me on retainer because an in-house counsel has a different role as an attorney most of the time. And I won't bore you with that distinction. But, you know, it's just the attorney relationship, especially when you're running and starting a business, it's very important. And, you know, to bring it back to kind of modern day, what's going on in the news, you know, the Me Too movement has, you know, obviously been huge through the last couple of years. And every time one of those stories popped up, when it was someone within a company, you know, if it wasn't just an individual acting on their own, I can assure you that that was a gigantic legal nightmare for any company that had employees that were involved in this. And, you know, at that point in time, it's good to have that established relationship with your attorney, because that's something that unfortunately is a reality of the world nowadays with the, you know, discrimination in the workplace and harassment in the workplace. And it's something that pops up a lot. So having that established relationship with an attorney for any of the issues that you have, I can promise you that those issues are not secluded to Hollywood and producers and directors or, you know, Fortune 500 companies. I promise you that that kind of stuff pops up probably even more in a small business with 5 or 10 employees. And, you know, it's something to be aware of. And if you have those established relationships, you know, it just kind of makes that process, it takes some of the stress out of that process, because at least you know that it's somewhat covered, and you have someone there that can help you kind of navigate those issues. So that's something that I would say I see a lot of established businesses that they just don't have the type of legal representation that they need, and they'll either try and handle it on their own, and it just becomes a gigantic mess. And it's, again, I understand it's a self-serving statement, but I promise you it's having those relationships are very needed.
That's a perfect example of why it's important to meet with an attorney when you start your business. Because before the show, I was going through some statistics, and I'm thinking capitalism, I'm thinking small business and reasons why they fail, why they succeed, blah, blah, blah. And it didn't even cross my mind. And I've been in a self-employed capacity for 25, 30 years, and it didn't even cross my mind, especially being a quote unquote woman business owner or being in the workforce as a female. The Me Too thing didn't even cross my mind. It didn't even cross my mind as something to just take a look at as a potential issue that may come up having a small business or having your own company, which you just brought that up. So I can tell you, most people are thinking their product, they're thinking their service, they're thinking an office, they're thinking, what am I going to do? And because that is such a big component of, like you mentioned, could go sideways, could go wrong, could be an issue, whether it's true or not true, does it matter? And also with diversity and inclusion, and there's such a big push for all of this, that when you're thinking business, you're just thinking, how am I going to make money? How am I going to be able to pay my employees? But there's so many other layers that are much more common and need to be addressed nowadays with just how the world is working and the culture and everything else. During that initial consultation, you're going to bring up these points to people that I just gave a perfect example of me. Didn't even cross my mind to think about bringing that up in the show today. And you're going to be able to bring up those things during that initial consultation, or any good attorney should, where not only you're talking structure for documents, but you're like, these are the things you need to be aware of, and you need to think about this. And you know, you might not have time or money to put together this component yet, but this is what this is how it works nowadays. So if you're going to be involved in having your own business, this is part of what you got to add on, and you got to be aware of it. So you need to make sure that it's done the right way. So perfect example.
Absolutely.
I'm glad you brought that up. And you can't do that on LegalZoom. And like you brought up relationships. During an initial consultation that you're having with somebody and you're going through their business plan and you're talking about different ways to structure, they're there to ask questions. And maybe just a couple, maybe a 20-minute conversation is going to restructure the way that they're going to do something, or the way that they're going to react, or what they're going to do next. And sometimes just that relationship you build with somebody, that initial conversation, can set a whole different precedent
for how somebody goes about, or maybe you have them rethink, like, you know, you might not want to focus that much on this because I don't necessarily know that there's a market need. You might feel hugely passionate about it, but there's a difference between having a passion turn into a business and one just really being a hobby. And sometimes, you know, that's what somebody needs to hear before they invest a bunch of money into something that's not going to get to the level where they expect. And you, having experience with dealing multiple companies and life, real life experience, can provide that feedback to somebody and save them a whole bunch of money and hardship and everything else, or just give them some redirection. So,
absolutely. And
if they're going to take it seriously, then it's time to take it seriously.
Exactly. And, you know, a lot of times, just like you said, somebody will come in to ask a question, and by the end of it, we're at a completely different aspect of the business because they didn't realize that the question they were asking had about six other subparts to it that they needed to consider. And a lot of times, too, if someone comes into me, for example, for an employment agreement, they'll realize that, well, actually, what I really want is an independent contractor agreement, because I don't intend for this person to be a full employee for me, which is also a consideration that people really need to take into account when they're running their business. Because if you have someone as an employee, obviously that comes with payroll taxes, certain services, certain things that need to be provided to them as a full-time employee, where an independent contractor is not entitled to those things. So those conversations, as we have them, they develop, and I'm able to tailor the issue down for them. And I actually, 2 weeks ago, I had someone come into me to discuss. He wanted to start an entity. He had a business idea, and he started talking to me about the business idea. And we sat there for about 20 minutes just going over it. And he kind of, by the end of it, said, you know, thank you, because I really haven't thought through a lot of these things. And he was second guessing whether he was going to go through with it because of some different legal problems and issues that were present in what he was going to do that made it a lot riskier than he previously thought. Now, I certainly don't want to be the dream crusher here. But, you know, those type of conversations are good, because, you know, it's better I have that conversation with him now than 6 months from now, when he has put $150,000 into this company and then had the realization that from a legal aspect, the risks are just too high, and now he's $150,000 in the hole. You know, so it's just, you need to have that other perspective, the legal perspective on when you're starting these businesses, because there's so many legal issues. And like you said, when you're starting a business, especially if it's something you're excited about, the last thing anybody is thinking about is the legal aspects of it. And I completely get that. Nobody wants to think about, you know, setting up the appropriate entity and having an operating agreement or having an independent contractor. I get that. They want to think about, oh man, I'm going to create this, and I'm going to go promote it here, and I'm going to market it this way, and this is going to be, there's a lot of excitement and fun involved in it. I get that. But that's why I'm here. I get to do the stuff that you're not excited about. But having that stuff and having that foundation, again, I continue to go back to the foundation, allows you to then concentrate on the exciting stuff and grow your business and promote it the way you want to, and know that you are completely protected. And, you know, I would say, and Michelle, I know we talked a bit about this a little bit before the show, that the three things that you absolutely have to make sure of in your business is when you're starting out is, number one on the list is, like I discussed, the entity choice. The entity choice is so important. I can't overstate that. It just determines so many different things, and especially in regards to the taxing. One of the biggest expenses you're going to have in your business is your taxes. So setting it up properly in a way that's going to minimize your tax liability as much as possible is choosing the appropriate entity. The second one is kind of, it's a few different things. It's the lack of protection. And this is, no, I shouldn't say the lack of, it's making sure you're protected, saying it a different way. And the way you make sure you're protected is with independent contractor agreements, employment agreements, non-competes, non-solicitations, and even the choice of the entity could fall into this category. But I see so many people starting businesses and not thinking about those things and having those protections, intellectual property, having that protection, just making sure you are protected and having those agreements in place just allows your business to flourish so much more because those issues are handled. And the third thing that is kind of out of left field, not in my area whatsoever, but in consulting with business owners for so long and handling so many business issues, the main thing I hear, especially for small businesses, is having someone trustworthy handling your financials within your business. I cannot tell you how many stories that I hear from people of stealing money from the company, embezzling money from the company, that they knew this person for years and they never thought it could happen. And it completely destroys the business. Because if someone that you do not have that relationship with or have that trust for is handling your financials and you are working off of books that are completely inaccurate and you think you have X amount of money and you don't have, I mean, it can completely destroy your business. So vetting that, whoever's going to be handling your books, again, especially for small businesses, you know, a big corporation can take a $500,000 or $1 million embezzlement hit and keep on moving. But a small business that, you know, maybe their profit each year is $100,000 and someone all of a sudden steals $300,000 or $400,000 from them, or even if they steal $50,000 from them, a small business can't take that kind of hit. And I can promise you that going after that person and trying to recoup money 9 times out of 10 doesn't happen because the money's gone and they don't have anything you can get to anyways. So that is really another key element that, again, it takes that extra beat for you to just take some time, make sure whoever is in that position is someone that you can rely on, that you can trust, and that you don't have that fear with. Begin. That's just another element to establishing that solid foundation to maximize your possibility of being successful and not falling within the 50% that Michelle said earlier of closing your doors within the first year, because that's no fun. You know, it's just, and especially it's really not fun when it was a good product or it was a good service. And the only reason it didn't succeed was because there was a lack of foundation. Because a lot of times, and I would say a majority of the time, that's why it didn't succeed. You know, they're bad ideas, don't get me wrong. You know, people wake up and, you know, I'm sure there's a lot of magnet companies that do well, but for the most part, waking up and saying you want to sell magnets, you're probably not going to, you know, bust the doors down and become Jeff Bezos here. But, you know, a lot of times there is a good idea, there's a good product, there's a good service, and it just didn't succeed because that foundation wasn't there. The time wasn't taken to set it up properly. And, you know, there's all sorts of different personalities, and that's what makes the world great. And I understand that a lot of highly creative people don't really think about that minutia and setting up that foundation. But I think seeing that in yourself and knowing that will allow you to then surround yourself with a person that can handle that, well, that will do that. And it could be an attorney you hire or a CPA you have a relationship with. It could be anything, but you need to be able to cast your own life appropriately to allow you to exceed with this business. And if you just know, hey, I'm the idea guy, you know, and a lot of times that's a cop out, but I'm the idea guy. I know what I want to sell. I know how I want to do it. I know where I'm going to go with this. Then that you should be able to say to yourself, because I'm that way, I need this guy over here to set the foundation for me so I can concentrate on the creative side and take off with that. But I know that everything's handled. So it's really just about taking that extra beat from the get-go and making sure to establish that foundation. And I think if people do that and take some of the things that I've said here today and just come in and talk with me, I really will allow people to have that better chance of success. And, you know, there's a lot of people that come and consult with me that have these vast legal needs, and they need this agreement drafted, or they need to set up a corporation and have all their bylaws drafted, or whatever it might be that requires them to retain my services. But the other great part about doing consultations like I do is you don't need to have all of those legal requirements to come have a consult with me. Some of the most impactful consultations I've had are people that just had some legal questions, that just had four or five legal questions. Hey, I'm thinking about doing this, or I'm thinking about doing that, and you know, I have a few questions, those type of consultations I do all the time. So don't think that if you aren't trying to need these agreements or any of these other legal needs, having a couple legal questions is just as valid a reason to set up a consultation. And I know there is also, again, that Google is quite persuasive, and typing in that question will most likely pop up a lot of answers. I can assure you that a lot of that information is not highly accurate, and even if it is accurate, it may and it probably does not apply to your specific situation, because everyone's specific situation is different, and a cookie cutter answer is not going to be helpful to you. And if you base your knowledge and you moving forward on a Google search, there's a good chance that you are going to get down the road in whatever you're doing and realize, I just based all of these actions off of incorrect information or information that really didn't apply to me, where just sitting down and having a 30-minute consultation can really get those issues out and allow you to move forward knowing that you have the accurate information and the tools you need to be as successful as possible.
Perfect segue to the end of the show, because sometimes, depending on what the question was, the answer could be viewed one way by one person and one way by another. It's the interpretation, and it's not necessarily black and white, especially with all the moving parts and the rules, the regulations, and everything else that goes along with things that you need to know in order to open the door and start selling something or a service. I think it was a great way to kind of sum everything up. And at the end of the day, sounds like protection and relationships and quality information is really what the whole purpose of sitting down with someone like yourself to really just figure out what needs to be done.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So just to kind of quickly recap, business plan, entity, intellectual property protection, and then get your other protections in line, employment, non-compete, non-solicitation, and make sure you establish those relationships, CPA, attorney, banking, and just having that checklist alone will, I think, really, really help people.
And it'll pay for itself down the road, and everything else will just kind of fall into place, and you could focus on what your whole purpose of doing the business in the first place was.
Absolutely.
Great information, as usual, Mr. Robert, protector of the people. Always a pleasure. The amount of notes that I take is just, I learn. And I hope that it's encouraging other people to just be a little bit smarter and give them some information about making some decisions that matter in their life. So until next time, my friend, Swinnick and Massey out.
Another great episode with my good friend, Robert Massey. Robert will be delivering the Massey Memo on the first and third Fridays of every month. All of our guests and experts' information and their shows are listed on our website, everythinghometalkshow.com. We encourage you to check it out and begin to use it as a resource to meet, hire, and learn from good people doing good business and good things. Just click anywhere on their banners and enjoy the show. You can also listen and subscribe to Everything Home on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, TuneIn, Player FM, and Blog Dog Radio. We're making it very easy and convenient for you to listen to us and enhance the quality of your life. And remember to like and follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. And feel free to send us an email or message on which topics you want to hear about and which guests you want to learn from. I appreciate you listening. Make it a great day, everybody.